Excellent.
Yes.
Yeah, hey.
Oh, it's so exciting.
On this day, we worked out how to record things.
Yeah, exactly. And we've got 40 minutes and we spent 10 minutes trying to work out how to record. This is going to be the shortest ever Say My Wobbles
Go
podcast.
for it.
Right. In this week, on the 7th of September 1991, a pitiful first division attendance of just 3,231 saw the Dons easily overcome a desperately poor Luton Town side at Selhurst Park. Andy Clark put Wimbledon ahead before Vaughan Ryan, remember him, added two after the break. Felt like a practice match with such a large stadium and such a small crowd. Manager Ray Harford commented, "The gates work much better at Plough Lane." But it was such an intimate ground, you always heard the fans. That's right, my friends. You always hear the fans at Plough Lane. We're the Same Old Wombles. We're back. Hello, hello, dear listener. We're recording on a Wednesday lunchtime. I'm losing track of time already, and we could only have three of our four regulars here, but three, including myself, Matt Cooper, and I'm joined today by mon frère, the saviour of football, Niall Cooper. Hello, Niall. How are you doing?
All right, Matty. All right. I've just obviously overcome the IT excellence of trying to be the Adam. And for those of you who know, Dr. Adam Proctor is in fact the king of buttons. And I am clearly, but even a novice in such things. And I have completely messed up on all of this. But we are here and we are recording. So it's wonderful.
You're not good enough to be called a
Exactly.
novice now.
Oh, dear me. And here he is, the voice, the opposition fans podcast. It is Tall Mark Lewis. Hey, Mark, how are you?
I'm very well, thank you. Actually, yes, a week is a long time in politics and even longer in football. Not as long as the last couple of minutes while we've been working with the Master of IT, which I think is the new name that we have to give Niall now,
Oh, yeah, Niall
for
Cooper,
not being
Master of
able to
IT.
understand how to record a Zoom meeting.
Do you know what I'm excited about in this podcast is
It's
because
like it's
we've
almost my job. Do you know what I mean?
what I'm excited about in this podcast is that we're recording it a couple of days after the Bromley game, which we won. We won an away game and we won at Bromley, which is like the first time in like forever, which is brilliant. But it means we don't have to talk that much about the Burton game. So we recorded the last episode before the Burton game, which was oh my gosh, should we just quickly go over it? It was just a disaster. I mean, I remember looking at my
No,
phone
Stockley
and we were
scored.
1-0 up. We were 1-0
Stockley
up. Stockley
scored,
scored.
and on the glorious XG statistics, we won 2-1. End of conversation. Right,
Which
move
once
on,
again
Bromley.
shows how what an utter complete bollocks XG actually is. Because we apparently were attacking, 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 and had actually that much more possession or whatever else in the last half an hour or so after we were already 3-1 down. But I mean, I think the only real important thing apart from Stockley scoring to mention about Burton was the fact that we fell apart away from home again, but also I think it was somewhere between 15 and 20 seconds, depending on who you believe, that it took from kickoff in the second half to conceding a goal, which frankly is Sunday league
Oh,
quality.
I mean, just absolutely appalling. And do you know what though? I mean, because it's a long way to go on a Wednesday evening. Because again, all the matches have been pushed back. This has been what's happened because of the Fulham game. We're still feeling the effects of it. I mean, it's just I just think it was ridiculous. So the only thing I could think of it is that we needed to offer a public apology to all of the fans that went up to that game, because I can't think of anything worse than travelling all that distance and then having to get back afterwards.
About 1:45 in the morning, I believe Dr. Lee Willett posted it on social media that he got back.
I mean, just awful. I mean, I don't know, and also, you know, because we. I think Burton, one of the sides that also were tipped as one of the favourites to go down, but they're doing incredibly well at the moment. And obviously
But
they've
we'd
got,
probably also said how early the season is.
Oh yeah, I mean, you know, here we are just five games in, and I was looking through the stats. We'll go and have a chat about Bromley in a minute. I was looking through the stats, and this time last season, after 5 games, we were on 9 points, and at the moment we're on 7. And by that time, I think we had beaten Lincoln, Reading, and Barnsley. So Lincoln, who got promoted, obviously they had a man sent off, but Lincoln who got promoted last season, Reading, I think, are going to be in a good position this season, and Barnsley, I think, are starting to do well as well. So I wonder if we've already dropped 2 points, haven't we? Because we drew with Reading rather than win.
I mean, my simple logic is actually assess our result, as you just done there with the Reading thing, against the equivalent teams. So, yes, we've dropped 2 points because we beat Reading at home last season, we drew nil nil the season. But if you're equating, for example, Bromley, who've just been promoted, with Exeter, who obviously were relegated, we lost home and away to Exeter last year, 1-0 both times. And we beat Bromley, so therefore we're 3 points up. So if you want to do the actual equation, we are ahead of where we used to be. But it's 5 games in. So, you know, I would just generally say, A, it's too early, but B, even if you are looking at stats, look at the stats of the type of clubs that we think are going to be in and around us. And Burton, obviously, we think are going to be in and around us. Likewise, possibly Barnsley. Likewise, probably Bromley. And we've been whooped twice away from home. I'm not counting the Fulham game. League games is what is actually significant. But we've been whooped twice away from home. But there've been a lot of whoopings going around. You know, I mean, Sheffield Wednesday scored 7 against Bromley, and I think we could have scored more as well. But actually, the clean sheet thing, I think, is probably the most significant thing. Yeah, I sent this to everyone early in the week. But Niall, can you remember how many clean sheets we kept last season in total? Taking yourself off mute, it's all
Niall's
good
managed to
when you
mute
do a Zoom
himself.
call.
Yeah, I know.
No,
This is
I
so.
can't. 8.
Correct. Very good. 8 all last season in 46 games. And we kept
That's
3 and 5
because
this year.
occasionally I do look at social media, but I could claim
Okay.
that I knew that off the top of my head. But 8. And therefore, compared to 3 this season, which means we're on track for doing far more clean sheets, which is a good thing. The problem is when we decide to not keep a clean sheet, we decide to basically play Santa Claus and give loads of people lots and lots and lots of goals.
Unless, of course, we are actually finally gradually working out what our best choice formation is.
Well, and
Formation and also personnel.
this
Oh,
is, I
yeah,
mean,
this
and
game,
this is
definitely.
exciting. This is exciting because
Best formation
things have
for us.
changed. Things have changed, and they've obviously changed between Burton and Bromley, because we bought in. Obviously, Bursic came in. I don't think he had much to do. To be honest with you, there was one saver ball was sort of struck at it and it
But that
deflected, and
was
he
a
had to make a
1-0.
trip. Yeah,
That's
so he
the
had
thing.
to,
That was a 1-0 and Hippo scored shortly afterwards.
So he's had to make it. So, but I don't think he hasn't had to do that much. Harrison's come in, and also Cessignon. But how are you pronouncing it, Mark?
Cessignon. Yeah. It's all right.
Cessignon. You did it. Okay, all right,
Yeah.
mate. Mate, you're a
With a bit of
natural.
French.
So has come in, and I think it was only, for me, it was only a matter of time before he's in the team, and I think he will be a regular starter for us.
Especially now that Tilly looks like, unfortunately, he's going to be out because we haven't heard anything on the injury thing. But those that were at Bromley said essentially it's a hamstring 100%.
Yeah, and if it's a hamstring, even if it's a mild hamstring, you're talking about 3 weeks, I think. So,
And if it's a Matt, Stephen's hamstring, it's about 3 months.
oh, yeah. I mean, and that is interesting. Anyhow, let's have a look at the Bromley game. Obviously, to say that even though it is our closest league club, Niall and I didn't go, and that is probably mainly due to PTSD. Anyone who is there in that, and I can't remember what division it was in
One
when.
prem, I want to say.
We kicked, one of their players was
Iron
injured.
Hall.
One of their players was injured, and we've given the ball we've kicked the ball out for them to have a throw in to give back to us because it was our possession. And what they've done is they've thrown the ball back in and scored straight away. So they didn't give the ball back to our players.
What he actually did is he kicked the ball back and it basically bounced high and went in.
Oh, it was a shot, Mark.
Of course it was a shot.
Yeah. And they
Ryan Hall is the man that Niall is name checking there, and yeah. No, he should never be forgiven.
Yeah, exactly. And then we expected them to let us walk it through and score, you know, but they didn't. And so that was just one of the horrendous things that happened there. And we played another side in an FA Trophy game. Was it Colne Hall? And also it was at Bromley that we lost our 78 beaten game record. So it's just not a nice place to go to.
And we actually know some Bromley fans, and I don't like them, to be honest. And it was just too much. Weirdly, there is another game next week which I have constantly boycotted and certainly will never go to Buckinghamshire. Definitely never, never, never. But we'll probably go next week. Which is an odd one. That I can actually face them more than I can face the team that's like not very far away from where me and Matt live. Both of which I don't like. But yeah. You know.
Well, I can't go. It's my wedding anniversary, and so I shall be somewhere
like
else, ignoring it.
Ignoring that match. You're going to be messaging us all the time saying what's the score, what's going on, how are we playing.
Oh dear me! Listen, I don't think there's ever going to be a better game than that 1-0 victory. That was just the most amazing. That last minute winner with the iconic Mikey T commentary. And the subsequent video by Sabre Wanderers regular John Green, so that was great. I can only hope that we have something similar or a fantastic victory. But anyhow, Bromley we didn't go, but it looked like a strong lineup. The reports I'm getting back is that Bromley didn't look that good, and obviously Stockley is just. He's just looking immense. I mean, he's coming across as a really good signing. I know we're really early in the season, but he scored two goals, obviously, from Tilly crosses. We haven't got Tilly again now, so hopefully we're going to put the balls in from another area or someone else will do that. But, what did you think of it, Mark?
I kept following it. I didn't actually watch it. I specifically haven't got Sky TV for that reason. Otherwise, I'd have less of a relationship with my family than I do. So I consciously just was following it on text updates. But obviously, it wasn't text updates normally, but it was actually live reporting, which is essentially just copying the comments that you got from Sky TV, which is quite amusing because even then, the BBC with their comments generally managed to be a little bit snarky about both teams overall, but you got for a change we had a few of our fans' comments actually were read out overall. Bromley fans certainly seem quite down in the dumps, but what struck me is a couple of things. Number one, despite loads of different comments internally on various WhatsApp groups about whether Alistair Smith is worth his place in the team, for example, the fact that Smith and Harrison were mentioned very little is, to me, a very, very positive thing, because actually it doesn't really matter who we play in attacking creative positions. If we haven't got the ball, we're not going to do anything. But actually it sounds like both Harrison and Smith were able to create things, break things up. In fact, I think the second goal was originally created by Smith dispossessing Michael Cheek, playing the ball through. Stockley then shows very good awareness and then puts a reverse pass into Hippolyte. And much like he did against Wigan the other week, he very calmly finished. If you can play the formation we're playing at the moment, which looks like it's one up with two tens in support, you have to get those runs from the midfield. You have to get midfielders scoring goals. I think our best midfield options attacking-wise are probably Hippolyte and Brown, because we don't really know. We haven't seen Cornick yet. We know we haven't seen Whisper yet either. You probably will see more Whisper now, you would imagine, because of Tilly's injury. But certainly, I think the tried and trusted options are Marcus Brown and Miles Hippolyte. And I don't know how many goals Hippolyte scored last season, but I want to say it's probably no more than four or five. And if he's got two already in the first five games, that's positive.
That is interesting. I was thinking about Brown because obviously he's not been, we haven't seen him since the transfer day debacle. And I'm wondering, who does he replace then? Who does he replace in that midfield three? Because now we're looking at, now you're looking at Harrison, Hippolyte.
He's in the two.
And yeah, it's not a midfield three. I said this last week, but it's definitely not a midfield three anymore. He has tweaked that.
Brown is the top of the diamond, or top of it. He's like, if you're playing 5-4-1, Brown is at the top of that four.
But who are you leaving out then? Because at the moment we've got...
sneak 12 players on the pitch. Job done.
At the moment, you can try to Tilly. He played Tilly ahead of Sessegnon on the right-hand side. And so it was Tilly and Hippolyte in behind Stockley. And obviously, someone will have to replace Tilly, and I'd say Brown can do that because it enables him to take the ball on moving forwards, enables him to run at players, and it also, more importantly, means he hasn't got to do the defensive work if he's got Harrison and Smith behind him to do that for him.
Who's crossing the ball for Stockley?
Everybody. Brown, potentially. Hippolyte, potentially. Obviously, you've got Sessegnon and Oggs presumably pushing up. The interesting thing is how many teams
are going to be playing. None of those are renowned for their crossing ability.
Well, both Oggs and Sessegnon are fullbacks. Fullbacks can cross. Are they as good as Tilly? Absolutely not. No. So we're definitely going to miss that.
But it's not because our listen. Let's go through this team. All right. Obviously, we've got Bursic in goal, but our centre backs are Oggs, Johnson, and Stockley.
Not Stockley, man.
Not playing in centre back.
Sweeney.
Yeah.
Unless he's badly twisted his ankle. Yeah.
I mean, listen, the other day he was playing centre back as well, so and wing back. So Oggs, Johnson, and Sweeney. It was interesting. Sweeney and Stockley both named in our in the League One team of the weekend. But that's right. And then wing backs aren't they going to be Sessegnon and Seddon?
Probably. Yeah.
Yeah.
And then you're talking about Harrison and Smith.
Yeah, and I'm talking about Harrison and Smith as holding midfield players.
As holding midfielders.
So Nelson. Nelson, I think, is a more attacking, creative player. He's not the kind of player that's necessarily going to go box to box. Because the other person we've forgotten, of course, is the one that came on for Tilly, which I was surprised about, which is Maycock. And everyone was crying out for Maycock's energy and enthusiasm and ability to break the lines. So actually, probably, even if Brown is actually back in training, I would say Maycock should get an opportunity from the start for the Doncaster game.
And then are you Maycock and Hippolyte with Stockley up top?
Yeah, for now.
Now, the issue is, where's McNeely?
Well, he didn't.
Squad depth, my friend, finally.
Yeah. I feel like there's someone in midfield that has been forgotten about here. Maybe it is just Nelson. But it would be Oggs, Johnson, Sweeney, Sessegnon, Seddon as wing backs, Harrison Smith as holding, Hippolyte and Brown behind Stockley.
Yeah.
Which is 5-2-3. And if you're defensively, then it's 5-4-1.
Yeah.
But then Brown isn't fit, so you're then thinking Maycock instead of Brown.
Yeah. But you see, if you look at it immediately for Doncaster, and you're talking about Stockley and Maycock and Hippolyte being your attacking options, with potentially both McNeely and Whisper to come in to supplement that, and also Sasu potentially. So there's 3-on-3, and that's even without Tilly being Cornick available, Stevens being available, or Brown being available, or Cornick being available.
And there's Cornick.
Yeah, exactly. And I think Cornick actually is that type of wide player. So there's your answer. It's probably Cornick, actually, when he's fit. But if Maycock gets a chance of a run in the team, which I think he deserves, and actually shows his aptitude and his energy, then maybe it's Maycock or Hippolyte. But then again, Hippolyte is left-footed, and that gives the team a great, very good balance.
See, what's interesting about this, right, is that because of the Bromley game, we're now kind of being a bit optimistic. After Burton, we were really pessimistic. So it's like, it feels like it's not a bad team and not a bad squad. And are we just basically going on the basis of it's the newbies that need to be bedded in, and then we've actually got something that looks approaching a competitive team against all opposition in this league?
Absolutely. I mean, I've just been proofreading the article that the Doncaster fans written for Saturday's program, and he was bemoaning the fact that they conceded the fourth most amount of goals last season. Sorry, fifth most amount of goals. And the only four teams that were worse off in terms of conceding goals were the three that got relegated and us. And we said this before, we had to rebuild the defence. We have rebuilt the defence. There's still question marks when a team runs at us, actually, as to how much support and how much general protection we can give for both Johnson and Sweeney, because the higher up the pitch they get caught, the more liable we are to counterattacks. You would like to think that Seddon and especially Sessegnon will help us out in that particular regard. But actually, if you've got two sixes, two pivots, whatever they call them, two defensive midfield players in Smith and Harrison, then that's their job. Their job is to protect the defence, not really be particularly seen, get our way with a bit of shithousery, not get loads of bookings. Bob Joinkle.
I mean, it still feels to me incredible the strength in depth that we've got now, because you could argue that Yeddom could easily get in there. Maycock should be.
Rubbish,
I mean,
yeah.
these are subs. Maycock should be starting. You've got McNeely. That you've got the guy. You got the guy from Brighton.
Whisper.
You've got Whisper, which is what we're all calling him. Yeah. Even though his name is Richards.
Yeah, I think he calls himself Whisper. So in that regard, and he's a cool Jamaican. So let's be the cool Jamaican and see if we can tap into some of that.
I mean,
He's in
it's
Jamaican international with 14 caps the age of 20.
exactly. So he's not any kind of liability.
And you've got Connick. I mean, it's this real strength in depth that we haven't had for ages. It just feel it's still we talked about it last week. It just still feels weird that we can afford it, and the fact that we can afford three goalkeepers, I think is kind of strange as well. And I saw something just moving on slightly to the financial situation. I noticed the club did put something out about bonds today, and looking at saying what they've. We budgeted for 1.7, and I think we're at 700,000, so we're still about £1 million off getting the bonds. But it just is. It just feels weird.
Anyway, due to various reasons, we haven't all been able to be together for the podcast. So I just wanted to talk about the Plough Lane bond in its current incarnation. So obviously, the Plough Lane bond it's been open all the time anyway, but recently there was a push for it, and fans indicated, or people indicated, they would invest £3 million in bonds. So far, we've had 650 grand, which is an amazing amount of money. To be honest, so thank you to everyone who did donate. But what transpires is that the club looked at that 3 million promise and decided that, conservatively, they would add to our cash pot budget 1.7 million. So that's what they did when they planned the year ahead. Was they planned for a 1.7 million pound sort of cash flow budget, which I personally think is a really bad idea, because that's budgeting against money that we don't actually have, money that was promised but doesn't actually exist. So that's a little frustrating, and I don't quite know what they were planning to do with that money, or how that, other than it being this cash buffer, which means that we have a deficit of like £1 million, And the club has just announced, obviously through the news, that they need to kind of find that £1 million in the next month. Otherwise, they're going to have to go and seek loans. So clearly, we've already spent the money that we didn't have, or we think we're going to need for the whole year, coupled with this idea that it would, you know, be attractive to investors that we had this money, which, of course, that's we knew that already. We've already discussed that on the podcast previously. So, I mean, I'm kind of pretty miffed that we are spending money we don't actually have, or looking to, you know, have our bank balance show money that we don't actually have. I do hope that more of those who pledged come forward over the next month. I'm going to be surprised if that many more do. So, yeah, I mean, I'm hoping the club is in the background phoning the people who pledged, you know, emailing them direct, etc., which I'm sure they are. I'm sure they are. But this seems like a really silly scenario. You know, the bonds in the past have been very specifically targeted for activities. I do not recall us using pledges of bonds to be our cash flow or our cash pot. So that is very frustrating. So yeah, I just wanted to add that into the podcast. I'll figure out how to add this in at some point, because yeah, this week's been a bit weird for all of us. But anyway,
we've made that. And no, I know, Nye, that you were saying that we can use the money from Junior and King and whatever we've made from Hackford going. Probably not much, if anything. But
buttons.
But exactly. It just feels to me like there's money in this. There's money in this somewhere. It just feels a bit weird to me.
One thing I think that people have forgotten about a bit is that we were always a club that sells. And one of the most common models in football is development of players and then flogging them. There's several different models of how football operates, and we're in that category, which is that you build up a really good academy, you develop them, and then you sell them. And yeah, we've got, for our level, yeah, a very good academy. If you look at where we go in the FA Youth Cup and how far we go and the trophies that we win, that's a team that is if you're a young player and you want to see, well, actually I'm going to develop and move on and be successful, then actually AFC Women is a really good choice. That's the model that we've got. And it's a model that was also the reason why we went up through the leagues back in the 80s. It's exactly that same model.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I don't think we could do that. But in those days, we were subsidised by an owner.
True, but as massive as you think.
Before her man came in, you know, that we did bucket collections to get Steve Hatter in about 1984, 1985, off the top of my head.
Yeah.
And I remember bemoaning in writing an article in Don's Outlook way back when, and I'm talking probably 35, 40 years ago. Lance Lowne can remember if he's listened to the pod, I don't know if he is. But yeah, I was bemoaning us selling players then. But yeah, Niall's right. We've done that model, and we have to keep doing that model. So I think there are three interesting sort of circles swirling around that will impact each other. Number one is, what have we just spent and where have we found the money somehow, even on some short-term deals, to get 12 players in during the transfer window, which we've never done anything close to before. Number two is obviously the bonds stuff, which is actually future financing. We've got to pay back at one point, whatever it is, and we are apparently a million and so short. The amount of pledges for the bonds has gone up by about 300,000 in about the last month, but it needs to go up a hell of a lot more, obviously, in future terms. And obviously the future, the third important aspect there is, where are we at with regards to financiers and potential investors? I've been told unofficially that there are ongoing discussions and that the Donsworth board will therefore be in a position between now, and we're recording on the 9th of September and the end of September, to be able to come out publicly onto podcasts like ours and other people's podcasts and obviously, you know, in person in the program, in person at the ground, and actually make statements about what's going on. I'd like, personally, I'd like there to be some kind of public meeting where we're in a position to be able to ask the Zontos board more questions, and ideally to be able to ask some of the actual individual representatives of the financiers questions as well. Whether that's going to happen, I don't know. But equally, yeah, no one's going to, it's going to be a two-stage process in terms of accepting things. And what caveats are there in there? Are there going to be any unpleasant caveats that none of us necessarily like? I don't know. Absolutely no.
I mean, no
at all. But I'm wondering, and it's complete pure speculation, but I'm wondering whether or not the financiers have said, okay, we're going to put X amount of money in. Here's an extra, I'm just picking a random number, 100K. And we've taken that 100K and put that towards some of the signings.
I mean, it's the only thing I can think of, because I mean, you know, and it is a question, and I think we need to put it to the DTB. So we will be inviting them on shortly to talk all this stuff through. I mean,
Audi in hand, my friend. Audi in hand.
Yeah, of course it is. What I think is interesting is there was the article, wasn't there, to say in the Independent, about, you know, bemoaning the death of fan ownership. And as I was reading it, I was saying I could just see Niall's face, you know, smugness going, oh, yes, I told you so. And I guess it's a weird one, isn't it? Because I found that kind of a little bit of a weird article, in so much that I still feel that we, even going down to 50%, I still feel that we are fan-owned. And we're making the best in this situation. And my sense is that, and the guy says this, that we weren't left with much of an option. Either we keep this current model, and that would mean that we would be, you know, around League Two or whatever. If we were like 75% owned, we'd be League Two, but 75% owned, and just wait for football to destroy itself and us to rise up through the ranks.
Well, there's a quote from that article that Matt's referencing here, which I think is quite opportune to mention. The fan-owned model is right if the environment itself is healthy. But if the environment is unsustainable, the fan-owned model itself actually loses out first. And that model is already harder to maintain practically. As reading between the lines, as Niall would be akin to say quite regularly, football's fucked.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, like, you know, I could talk about this forever. And, you know, I'll be honest that I've been a bit remiss in the background, because there's a couple of people I need to be talking to about looking at campaigning on fan ownership and where we go with that. Because there is a little bit of a policy, and there is a bit of an opportunity to push forward on that. And we really need to, because it's not very optimistic for fan ownership, the fan ownership model, until the system starts to change, and we need to do that. But I've been talking about this for a long time, and it does
I think
puzzle me that people aren't quite... What?
That's the problem, Nye. The problem is time, because I think we might get to a situation, but I think it might be too late for us.
Where I'm at with this is it's the short-termism that's killing us, because I've been talking about this for 5 years, and very few people within the footballer ecosystem, and actually within AFC Wimbledon, have really realised what I was talking about 5 years ago and continue to talk about. So you talk about time. We actually had time. And if we don't do anything now, then frankly, and you know, I'm a lover of fan ownership massively, we're doomed, because we need to start acting, and we need to start doing it. And we should have done that 5 years ago. And the fact that we haven't means that if we do nothing, our path is pretty bleak. If we start to do something, at least there's a chance. And that's the point. And I'm not seeing us doing...
What is that? Okay, well, listen, we've literally got a couple of minutes left. I'm not sure what that something is. I mean...
Something is that the Don's Trust, and that the fan base, and that the other organisations and clubs like Exeter City start rallying and start acting as though life depends upon it, because the reality for those two clubs, us and Exeter, is life depends upon it. And we've not realised that. It's a bit like there's no planet B, there's no club B, right? That's it. It's we are on the path to losing our club, but we're running out of time.
Yeah, well, I'm not sure. I
But
mean, I think
literally,
we do. I think we,
metaphorically.
no, I think we're doing the. I think we're. I think we're doing the best that we can in our situation to save our club. I mean, like, we're not pro selling up, but we're not pro selling up. But equally, we know that we have to keep going in this environment. Anyhow, this is kind of like a short little podcast for you guys today. It would have been maybe a little bit longer if we'd have worked out how to do the record the Zoom. But the point is, we roll on. We've got a result against Bromley, which is the first time in like forever, which is brilliant. Mind you, having said that, I'm not entirely sure how many times we've played them. And
Too many.
too many. And now we roll on to this Saturday at Doncaster. Anyhow, many thanks to mon frère Niall Cooper, the substitute IT man, and to Tormark Lewis for getting off the Opposition Fan podcast for a couple of minutes to join us. My name is Matt Cooper. We are the same old Wombles. We're back.
Say